Okay. So our goal for tonight, our stated goal, is to try and figure out our priority list of davening. Davening is something which, if it's going to be done properly, it's something which takes time, and it takes concentration, and it takes a bit of peace and quiet. If anybody has found that recently, let me know wherever you got that, because I'd be more than happy to find any one of those commodities. It's something which is very difficult to come by. And it's understandable, and as we'll see, this is something which is not only 21st century or 20th century reality. This has been part of the fabric of the Jewish people for centuries and centuries and centuries, trying to carve out that necessary time to be able to daven properly. From one of the other hats which I wore, so I saw that people talk about how deliberate one should be when they say Pesukei Dezimra, and how one should be saying Shemoneh Esrei in the proper manner. So some posts can go ahead and they give time, but the correct amount of time, an appropriate amount of time to be able to, in which to daven. So it's fascinating to see how other people sort of rate these things. So they said about half an hour is a good amount of time for Pesukei Dezimra during the week. Now, for just Pesukei Dezimra. Now, many shuls are done long before 30 minutes are done, from the beginning all the way until the end. On Shabbos, if you have a 30-minute Pesukei Dezimra, that's already impressive, and you have an additional 7 or 8 paragraphs. So this is something which is very difficult to come by, and therefore it's necessary to be able to create a hierarchy, depending on the amount of time which you have, what's considered to be a more important tefillah, what's a less important tefillah, and to be able to, again, on your own, to be able to figure out how long it takes you to say various tefillahs, so that you'll know the difference. If I have 22 minutes, I'm going to say these number of tefillahs. If I have 25 minutes, I'll say a couple more, and how to make sure that with that extra time, I'm saying the correct tefillahs. Now, it happens to be, and this is part of what is fascinating about this particular topic, is that there's a section in Shulchan Aruch which deals with what happens if there's not enough time to daven. It's a special thing. A person shows up at the end of Pesukei Dezimra. How do I prioritize the tefillah to tell me which is most important, which is second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth? The problem that creates is that hierarchy is structured for men, and it's not the same structure for women. Women, as we're going to see tonight, based on what we talked about a couple of weeks ago in terms of mitzvah sesesh asman grama, positive time-bound mitzvahs that women are not obligated to do, but if they want to, they can voluntarily do so. But that's not going to be the same thing as far as some of the tefillahs that creates this discrepancy between the men's hierarchy of tefillah and the women's hierarchy of tefillah. So it's only recently that we find that Poskim have been trying to put together the women's hierarchy of tefillah, coming up with a good, workable chart, which is going to be manageable, and which will be instructive. The chart you have on the back of the sheet. So this is my effort to go ahead and try and clarify things and try and figure things out. Hopefully, by the time we're done at 8:15 or so, hopefully you'll understand why you have the tefillahs ordered in the order in which they are. I didn't put them in the order in which they are in the sitter. I put them according to the hierarchy, according to their from the most important to least important based on time. But in order to understand anything on the chart, so we need to go through a number of sources just to get the working principles, which are going to guide us through our formulation of this chart. Okay. Now, so 2 weeks ago we said, whatever you may have missed from 2 weeks ago, we'll say tonight, so it's not going to make a difference, but we said that generally women are exempt from mitzvah sasesh asman grama. Any positive mitzvah, which is time-bound, watching fireworks on July 4th, Mahavdil, so that's something where the calendar tells you, you must do this on this particular day, that becomes a positive time-bound mitzvah. So the general rule is women are exempt. Something which is obligatory in the time of day also is categorized as a mitzvah sasesh asman grama, a positive time-bound mitzvah, as well, women are going to be exempt. So you take, for example, talis. Everybody's going to agree that women are exempt from the mitzvah of talis because we hold that talis is worn from the morning until night. It's not worn at nighttime. Therefore, it's a positive time-bound mitzvah. As a positive time-bound mitzvah, women are exempt. Okay. So the question is going to be, so seemingly if we take that principle as fact, which we should, and we immediately try and apply that to davening, our immediate reaction would say, shacharis I can only say in the morning, that means it's time-bound. Mincha I can only say in the afternoon, it's time-bound. Marav I can only say at night, it's time-bound.
mitzvah say shas man grama, we could just close up the sitter and don't even have to even make an attempt to go ahead and daven as an obligation, because it's all time bound. It's all time bound mitzvahs. So for that, we have the first source. Source number one, this is the Mishnah in the Gemara Brachos. So it says as follows. Nashim v'avadim uktanim peturim mikriya shma uminat tefillin. So women, what we need to know is the women are going to be exempt from Kriya Shema. They don't have to say Kriya Shema, because you say Kriya Shema when you wake up, which is day, when you go to sleep, which is night. So since there's two different mitzvahs, that's time-bound, women are exempt from Kriya Shema. The chayavim, the tefilo, the mezuzah, the birchas hamazon, and they're obligated in Shmon Esrei. Tefilo, according to the terminology of Chazal, refers to Shmon Esrei. So the two most important prayers that we think about, Shema and Shmon Esrei, so the Mishnah just, and both of them are within chakras and mar, so seemingly they're both the same as far as time bound, and yet the Mishnah says, Kriya Shema, women are exempt, Tfila, Shmon Esrei, women are obligated. Why is that so? Either exempt me from both, because they're time bound, obligated me in both, because even if they're time bound, maybe there's some overarching principle which is going to apply the gravity and the importance of them, maybe that will overwhelm the principle that women should be exempt from mitzvah say shas man grama. But how do we go ahead and figure out why women are going to be exempt? It happens to be that this is codified, that's what you have in source number two, this idea that women are exempt from Kriya Shema and women are going to be obligated in Shmon Esrei. Now, we have to understand why that's so. So here, we're going to jump. We jump, historically, we're looking for the... Yes?
I know this wasn't a topic, but you said, it says here, I mean, the mezuzah. And what does it mean by that? That we have to put a mezuzah on the door, or
right.
We have to kiss the mezuzah, or, you know, just
that we're... To have the mezuzah on the door. Mezuzah is an example of a positive mitzvah, which is not time-bound. There's no date on the calendar, and there's no time on the day which says you must put up a mezuzah now. When you buy your house, whenever that is, you have to put up a mezuzah. So, what we're going to see now is, in the Aruch HaShulchan, we're going to jump around just to find the sources which you want, which will address the points which you want. So the Aruch HaShulchan here, he actually spends 5, 6, 7 paragraphs elaborating on the history of Tila, which is in and of itself is a fascinating read, but we're going to try and just pull out from this those parts which we need for our discussion. So the first paragraph, in source number 3, there's an aleph at the beginning of that paragraph. So this is going to be a straight quote from the Rambam, but it's very important because it gives us a perspective on the nature of davening. So I write this follows. Because of a Rambam ratio called tefillah, the Rambam writes at the very beginning of the halakha of the tefillah, mitzvah asay b'skala b'chol yom. There's a positive command to daven every day, shenamar, and this is based on the pasuk which is in Kriyat Shema. You should serve Hashem your God. What does it mean to serve God? So based on Chazal's analysis, they derive shavodazu hitzila, that this service or worship that the pasuk refers to is referring to daven. So you should daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the service of God. You should worship with all of your heart. The Chazal say, what's considered to be service of the heart? How do we serve God with our heart? That comes from davening. That becomes, we take what's in our heart, we express it verbally to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that becomes, that equation ends up being tefillah. Now, the Rambam says a very important idea. The number of times you have to daven a day is not mandated by the Torah. The Torah doesn't say there's such a thing as shachris, mincha, and mar. The Torah only says daven. Not in those words, it says love though. But you have to worship it, but that's all the Torah says. Then you set us up tefillah mina Torah. Furthermore, what you say when you daven also is not mandated by the Torah. If you want to say, you know, as they would say in camp, rub a dub dub, thanks for the grub, that may very well qualify as a tefillah according to the Torah, and you may have fulfilled your biblical obligation of davening by saying something very short and something very to the point, and we'll see that that actually finds expression practically in the halacha. The aim at number 3, vein the tefillah is man kavur min haTorah. The Torah doesn't mandate when during the day you should daven. So the number of times you daven, what you daven, when you daven, none of that is mandated by the Torah. All the Torah cares about is you must daven every day. Lefika. Now, if we say that the obligation is every day one must daven, so now let's ask ourselves a question again. Is tefillah a positive time-bound mitzvah, or is it not? By the Torah it's not. I misled you purposely. I misled you by saying we daven shacharis, we daven mincha, we daven maariv. Each of them has a time in which it has to be said. But according to the Rambam, that's a rabbinic innovation. The rabbis went ahead, and we'll see why they went ahead and did so, but the rabbis went ahead and said there'll be such a thing as davening in the morning, in another way of davening in the afternoon, in a third way of davening in the evening. But according to the Torah, all we say is daven every day. Daven every day is not time bound. Each and every day, there's going to be an obligation to daven, and therefore, the Rambam says, nashim v'avadim chayavim b'tefilah. Therefore, women are also going to be obligated in davening, l'fishu mitzvah tasei shelo azman grama, because it's a positive mitzvah, which is not contained in time, it's not confined to time. Elochi mitzvah zu kahu, but rather, the nature of the mitzvah is, she adam, mitzchanet mitzvah b'chol yom, that a person should supplicate in daven every day, umagit shifcho shalach and baruchu, and they should relate the praises of God, v'achakach shol tzracha, then you ask for your needs, shutzach lehem v'batasha v'tchina, that you should ask in the supplications, v'achakach nosen shevach v'hodaya la'ashem, and then afterwards you give praise and thanksgiving to Hashem, ala tova sheishpia lo al kol echa tefikoko. So this is, essentially, this is the three parts of Shemoneh Esrei. The first part of Shemoneh Esrei, the first three brachas are, we are praising Hashem. The middle section, the 13 brachas in the middle, we ask for our needs, our individual needs, our communal needs. The last three brachas are, hodah, our thanks to Hashem for all that He's bestowed upon us. That's the pattern, according to the Rambam, of biblical prayer. Three parts. Praise, requests, and then thanksgiving. And that's it. Again, if you could get that into one sentence, I could say that tefillah in six words, I could say that tefillah in five words, however many words it's going to take you to express that, each person according to their comfort, what they're feeling that particular day, it doesn't make a difference. Midaraisa from the Torah, that's all that's necessary.
You said praise, requests, and what?
And thanksgiving. So if I rub it up, though, things will go, probably won't cut it, as far as that. It'll have prevention, but it's not going to cut it. Unless it's some language, right? Unless it has some sort of phrase, right? Exactly. Okay. So now he writes, now we jump down to the second paragraph there, the one that begins with base. V'ine l'datan Rambam, ha'v'tfila b'chol yom mitzvah saseh. So according to the Rambam, davening every day is a positive command. The Moshe Bir is the Sefer HaMitzvahs, Mitzvah Hei, like he explains in his book, his work on the Mitzvahs, Ubisifri Yom, okay. In Halakha Midrashim, they express a similar idea. The Ramban Cholek Alav. Now the Ramban, this is a famous disagreement, the Ramban, Nachmanides, not Maimonides, but Nachmanides, he disagrees. V'svir Leit D'Tfili Himi D'Rabban. He maintains that prayer is entirely a rabbinic innovation. That there's no such thing, the Torah does not expect anybody to daven on a daily basis. The only time it points to the Ramban, the simple reading of the Ramban, that one is obligated to daven, is if the person is in distress, in a circumstance of distress, everybody's expected to call out to the one who can help you. The only one who can help you is Avinu Shebashamayim, our Father in Heaven. So it's at that time that one is expected to daven, but on a daily basis, if things are going smoothly in your life, there's no biblical obligation, according to the Ramban, to daven at all.
I'm just curious, if at that point you're daven, you start to follow that people are going on.
The Ramban also will agree that, right, that was part of the rabbinic innovation. He says all of it was done by others. So it's not two-tiered, it's one tier with all of those different components in it. Now, what comes out from this is what we need is, according to the Ramban, on the one hand, there's a biblical mitzvah to daven, and therefore without any time constraints whatsoever, and therefore women are obligated the same as men. According to the Ramban, davening is completely a rabbinic innovation, and when they innovated, and when they structured davening in the first place, they did its very origin within time constraints. They made a shacharis, they made a mincha, and they made a maariv. And therefore, according to the Ramban, women were not part of that enactment. So this becomes a huge disagreement between the Ramban and the Ramban, not just in theory of the origin of tefillah, but this is a very practical ramifications. Is a woman obligated to daven every day? According to the Rambam, there is an obligation to daven every day. According to the Ramban, seemingly there's no obligation whatsoever. Now, Baruch HaShulchan himself rejects that notion that according to the Ramban, it's possible that there would not be an obligation to daven. He says it's inconceivable that you could have a functioning and living Jew who's not davening every day. He says it's impossible. So he goes ahead and he manipulates, and he uses, like we use in the Gemara type of terminology, he uses the sledgehammer to slam a pshat into the wording of the Ramban. But on a very simple level, there is that disagreement. And that, if you look at the very top of the second side, you see an example of what it means to take a sledgehammer to try and slam that pshat in. So he says, the paragraph that says...
I'm sorry, who said that?
This is the Aruch HaShulchan.
Okay.
No, so the paragraph is beginning, there's a little above at the beginning of the paragraph. The second side of the first page says, V'yoser mizeh hir l'pienis daiki. What appears most correct to me is, without the Ramban, she'en and ha'shevet ben fatei ha'mitzvahs, says, why is it according to the Ramban that davening is not counted as one of the mitzvahs? V'fisha gavoa me'al gavoa. He says, not because it's less than a mitzvah, he says it's so high above any particular mitzvah that it's this overarching principle that all of Judaism is going to rest on, and we don't need to count it as one of the mitzvahs. Like similar to you find some commentators maintain that belief in God is not one of the 613 mitzvahs. What do you mean? How could you be a functioning Jew without belief in God? And the answer is, that's exactly the point. Mitzvahs are commandments which come once you recognize that there is a creator. So if there's a mitzvah to believe in the creator, it's circular logic. I have to believe that the creator, who then commands me to do what? To believe in the creator. So which comes first? Is it the mitzvah or is it the creator? So there are some commentators who say there is no mitzvah to believe in God. We don't hold that way. But there is this idea that something is so overarching that everything else is going to rest on it. So the Aruch HaShulchan is suggesting that according to the Ramban, tefillah is so fundamental to somebody who's going to function as a Jew, then we don't even count it as one of the individual detailed mitzvahs. It's something which is absolutely essential, the same as belief in God. Shatfila havi, because tefillah is an important idea, and it only applies to Shmona Esrei, but it's an important idea, a mindset. Ka'omei lifnei ha'melech. A person has to perceive themselves as standing before the king, umedaber imo pani v'panim, and you are speaking to that being, face to face, to be awful as it were. And that's why Shmona Esrei has to be said while standing. Because nobody speaks to the king while sitting. Maybe nowadays they get to sit around the conference table, that may be. But in the old days, when you imagine your fairy tales and somebody came before the king is sitting on his throne, and whoever was speaking to the king had to stand in front of the king at attention. They had to properly address him. So that's the mindset that one has to have for Shmona Esrei, right? But that's the way the Ramban takes it. Now, that said, comes along in source number 4, a very important Mishabura. And this is going to sort of tie this together and begin to direct us in terms of practical. So he says, the Mishabura is commenting on source number 2, that women are exempt from Shema, but they're obligated in Shmona Esrei. Now how does that happen? So the Mishabura explains, we're skipping the first few words after the dash. He says, Kozel without the Rambam. He says the obligation that women have to daven every day, that's according to Rambam. Shirak Zmane Tfila Hemedi Vesokim. Because according to the Rambam, the times of davening are rabbinic, but the obligation to davening is something which is biblical. Avotikim Mitzvah Tfila Imin HaTorah, but the primary obligation of Tfila comes from the Torah. Shenemar says, you should serve Hashem with all your heart. What is considered to be service of the heart? That's going to be Shmon Esther. But the wording which you're supposed to use is not from the Torah. According to the Torah, you could compose every day, if you're creative and you're poetic, if you want, you could compose a new prayer each and every day, whatever to address whatever you're feeling that day. And some days you may want to daven first thing in the morning. Some days you might want to grab some time away from work during your lunch break and daven. Sometimes it'll be at the end of the day. Sometimes it'll be before you go to sleep. Whatever you want. And as soon as you davened once during the day, your biblical obligation has been fulfilled. You don't have to do anything with it. So if you want to get it over first thing in the morning, before you go jogging or something, and then you've got your exercise out of the way, you've got your davening out of the way, you've got the rest of the day to go ahead and address everything else, that's fine. Now, that's according to the Rambam, which the Mishabura says is what Shulchan Aruch is following. Now, here comes the kicker. Because of the Magen Avraham, so the Magen Avraham writes, Shal pi svar hazu, that based on this rationale, Nazu roha nashim she'en nisfalim shmon esrei b'tmidis, Shachar the Erev. Based on this, most women Magen Avraham is going now into the 16th century. He's saying most women don't say Shemoneh Esrei in the morning and the afternoon. They're not saying Shemoneh Esrei Shabbos, they're not saying in the, and they're not saying Mincha. V'fisha omos miyad v'bokeh samach l'netilah is a bakasha. Because immediately in the morning, they wake up, they say their Mogahani, they wash their Negovasser, they say, right after they get through that first part of washing in the morning and saying in Tfilas Naim, they make some sort of request from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, some short little tefillah, umin HaTorah Yotzes Gezeret. And they've now fulfilled their obligation. And they're done. They stopped davening after that. They didn't say, Baruch Shamar, Ashrei, Yishtava, Shema, Shmanetz, they didn't say any of that. After they wash their hands, Amitiyashdaim, a quick prayer, and that was the end of it. And the Magen Avraham is commenting that this was the common custom amongst women. Vashar, Shasta Chamin Lochai Yoser. And it's possible that even the rabbis didn't obligate anything more than that. In other words, that it could very well be that when the rabbis created or innovated Shachris Mincha Maariv, they only did so for the men. They left the women taking care and addressing only their biblical obligation. So they remain on the biblical obligation, a prayer, sometime during the day, about whatever you want. And that they just stuck with that, right? And the rabbinic innovation never applies to them. About that, the Ramban, Shikha Mitzvah Satchiva Himidibre Sofi, but according to the Ramban, that the primary obligation for davening is rabbinic in origin. Shehem Anshek Nesses Agdol, the men of the Great Assembly in the time of the second, towards the end of the second Beis Hamikdash. Shetiknu Shmonasre Brachos Alasegel Yisfalos on Shabbos Mincha Chova, that they enacted, they have to say Shmonasre in the morning, in the afternoon, as an obligation. V'arvis Rishos, and Davin Marit as an optional law prayer. V'av Vishu Mitzvah Sesemi Dibar Sobim Shazman Grama, even though this tefillah, according to the Ramban, is a positive time-bound mitzvah innovated by the rabbis, v'anashim feturus v'komis nesesh hazman grama, afilu midivei sofim, and generally women are going to be exempt from that, v'gom kirshul avana, like kirshul avana, which we mentioned last week very briefly, afal fike, nonetheless, the Ramban maintains, chaybo sam betkila shachris v'mincha k'mo anashim. According to the Ramban, women are obligated to daven shachris and mincha the same as men, holu tefila hiba pashas rachim. Because the very nature of tefillah is to beseech HaKadosh Baruch Hu for mercy, and there's no distinction between men and women as far as needing Hashem's mercy. So even though it should fit into the pattern of mitzvah tesei she'azman grama, a positive time-bound mitzvah from which women are going to be exempt, again, the Mishnah Berurah is asserting that according to Ramban, there's an overarching need that everybody has to daven, and that's going to include women as well. And then he says, v'chein ikar. The Mishnah Berurah now declares that this is considered to be the primary opinion, that women should be davening Shmoneh Esrei, Shacharit, and Mincha each and every day. Not like the Rambam, and not like Shulchan Aruch say, who might let you get away with a small tefillah at some point during the day between whatever happens to be your the rest of your daily activities. According to the Mishnah Berurah, the primary opinion in Halacha is that women must say Shmoneh Esrei in the morning, and they must say Shmoneh Esrei in the afternoon. Same as men. He's going like the Rambam. And then he says, read two more lines. And then he says, "V'chein Dasov Poskim." This is the opinion of most Poskim. "V'chein Yichriya B'Sefer Shabbos Aryeh." And this is also the opinion of the Shabbos Aryeh. Okay, an authority. "Alken Yeshli Lehatu L'Nashim Shishtalu Shmonasre." Therefore, one should encourage the women to daven Shmonasre. That's the point of tonight. "V'Nachom Gankein Shikavu Alem O Matu Shemayim." It's also appropriate that they should verbally declare. So that was a combined word. Verbally, we'll go with that. You could verbally declare the acceptance of the yoke of heaven. That they should say Shema Yisrael. Now he just said a fascinating idea over here. Shema Yisrael. The obligation to say Shema in the morning and the afternoon. We're sticking with the mission, which says women are exempt. Women are absolutely exempt from saying Shema. What's the reason they should be encouraged to say Shema? Because there are, what's referred to as the Sheish Mitzvot Tamidios. There are six constant mitzvahs, which, whenever you're bored, you're doing nothing throughout the day, you can think about any one of those six mitzvahs and you're in fulfillment of a positive, or you're avoiding a prohibition. Throughout the day, 24/7, you could always be fulfilling a mitzvah by thinking about those six mitzvahs. So acceptance of the yoke of heaven is one of those. It has to be done each and every day, not confined to time. So Shema is a nice way to fulfill that mitzvah. Shema Yisrael, Shema Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Six words you went ahead and you did another mitzvah to say. You did another biblical command, but not because women are obligated to say Shema. It's not an obligation of Kriya Shema, it's an obligation of acceptance of the yoke of heaven. And that's the reason he gives why he would encourage a woman to go ahead and say Shema, but it's nowhere near Shemoneh Esrei. Shemoneh Esrei is a much higher priority because he maintains that women are absolutely obligated to say Shemoneh Esrei, Shachas and Mincha. Okay? Okay, so now let's sort of summarize what we know, and then let's see how we can go ahead and apply this to make a little headway in our chart. So we're saying now that as far as Shemoneh Esrei is concerned, we're going to say that according to the Ramban, which is the way the Mishnah Berurah passes, that's an absolute obligation. And therefore, that's why you see it's 1.1 on your chart. That's the highest. You don't have time for anything else. So you should make sure you get in your Shemoneh Esrei, Shachris, and Mincha.
It's not a problem
to Shemoneh Esrei without the Torah. Maybe not. Pashas not. Right? A fascinating thing about the weekday Shemoneh Esrei. As far as liturgy is concerned, there's this great discrepancy between the weekday Shemoneh Esrei and Shabbos and Yom Kippur. I can ask you to speculate what that is, but you really have to be in tune to this. I only know because somebody else pointed out to me. I haven't not even myself. But on Shabbos and Yom Kippur Shemoneh Esrei, there are quotes of Sukkim. In the weekday Shemoneh Esrei, there's no pasuk. Which is a fascinating thing. So Birchas HaTorah would be necessary in order to say a pasuk of sort, since there's no pasuk in the weekday Shemoneh Esrei, you can really get away with it. You might be able to get even with Sukkot and Zimra without Birchas HaTorah, but certainly Shemoneh Esrei you should be able to get away with it.
Is a woman obligated to make Birchas HaTorah?
Yeah, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that. That's okay.
I need to jump in the gun, but I noticed that you also have the Brachos to come after Shema as a priority under Shemoneh Esrei. Can you say God Yisrael well after you say Shemoneh Esrei?
Okay, so hold on. We're going to try and get to all that. So now, as far as Shemoneh Esrei is concerned, so that's an absolute obligation. Now, next on the list is Birchos HaShachar. Birchos HaShachar is something. We're going to jump around a little bit. Now, go to source number 8, the second paragraph of source number 8. In the middle of that second line, there's a period. Afterwards, it says Ula Inyan. Yeah? So, it says, U'inyan Birchos HaShachar. As far as Birchos HaShachar is concerned, Birchos HaShachar, if you look, I have the pages marked off over there, says all the way from page 14 to 20, I put out our scrolls so they're for you to be able to have. So I included in Birchos HaShachar, all the way from Al-Natil HaShadayim, Asher Yatzar, Elokai Neshama, Birchos HaTorah, and all of those brachas through page 20, the 15 brachas which we say, all of those, all the way through Gomel Chassadim Tovim Lamo Yisrael, I consider all of that to be Birchos HaShachar.
Which page did you start on?
I started on page 14.
Okay, from 14 to 20.
From Netziah Shadayim.
Okay.
Rabbi,
you said after the period, this book that time is, so number 8?
Number 8, second paragraph, second line of the second paragraph.
Let's just look at the right here. That
I don't know why this happens. PDF is supposed to be like a picture of the document, and then you print it, and it's supposed to, like your smear shade, say no. It doesn't work for me. I had this, I tried printing it from 2003 to 2007, and it came out messed up the font, and messed up the layout and everything else, so I said, okay, I'll just make a PDF, and then I'll send it to myself, and then I'll print off the PDF. And on my screen, the PDF looks exactly like the Word document. Then when they print it, lost it again. I don't know how that happened. Anyway. Well, let me bear some of the stuff in the way I had it on my computer was some of the stuff was bold. So it would be easier to find because I bolded it and I could just say the bold and that would be much easier. Well, let me bear some of the as far as bear some of the that's page 14 to 20. Again, not all of that is the same, but the Chorah totally is that the name of the Brachos Eliyashon is not. So this will depend on, is there a time frame in which bear some of the which we call the morning blessings, is that an accurate term? Are they actually morning blessings, or are these brachas which are recited once a day? So there's machlokas. What happens if a person ran out of time, there was an emergency going on, it's 4 hours into the day, it's past midday, and you never got around to saying Berachos HaShachar. Do you say those brachas in the afternoon or not? So like Shachar, Shmon Esrei, if it's already past midday, nobody's going to say, you say Shmon Esrei, you've lost, but the time just passed, so you can't make it up anymore. Is Berachos HaShachar the same thing or not? And he says that, he goes on to say that it would seem his tendency is to say that Birchas HaShachar is not confined to any particular time. It's a misnomer that we call it Birchas HaShachar. They're really daily brachas, daily expressions of thanks for the physical blessings that Hashem Baruch Hu bestows upon us. Our ability to see, our ability to walk, our ability to sit straight, all of those physical things. They have to be recited once a day. Once we say they're not time bound, then there's no reason that we should say women are exempt. So that becomes a priority as far as their obligation. Included in that is Birchas HaTorah. Birchas HaTorah you have on page 16. That is written explicitly. That's on the top of page. That's page 3, right above 6. There's paragraph 6, and then the line above it. So source 5 is on the previous page. That just tells you where it is. So it says Shulchan Aruch says explicitly, Nashim Mevarchos Birchas HaTorah. Women are absolutely obligated to say Birchas HaTorah. So that's something which is indisputable. Nobody is going to question that. So that's why I grouped all of that together. So you wash Negavas in the morning, you do Netziah Shadayim, Asher Yatzar, Elokai Neshama. They have it out of order a little bit. They have Elokai Neshama on page 18. Many people will say it on the bottom of page 14. Then 16 is all Birchas HaTorah. And then you have on page 18 to 20, you have the rest of Birchas HaShachar.
If we were really rushed, can you skip
I would try and say I would skip the Eilu Dvarim rather than those. You should do some learning right afterwards to make sure that the Bracha on Torah goes to something.
Okay. So we have a chiyuv to say the Birchas Torah. It has to be in the morning.
No, Birchas Torah is any time. Okay. Sometimes before learning, but any time during the day.
If somebody calls up and you have some of our Torah going now. Conversation.
You have to stop
and say the
brachos if you
have a time.
Correct.
It's not enough to just say
that's okay. You have to say the shema. Yeah, all that is part of the enactment of Birchas HaTorah. Those first two paragraphs. You want to break it down. The first two paragraphs, the two baruch sections. So that's actually Birchas HaTorah. The reason why you have the next three paragraphs, Yivrecha, Eilu Dvarim, and Eilu Dvarim, is because the first, the Yivrecha are psukim. The first Eilu Dvarim is a Mishnah, and the second Eilu Dvarim is a Braisa. So it's as if you learn a little bit of Tanakh, a little bit of Mishnah, and a little bit of Gemara. So that's why they chose those three things in order to have covered all of the different sections of Torah. We do that two or three times through the beginning of Sukkot and Zimra when we go through Sukkot, Mishnah, and Gemara.
So if you learn right after saying this
stuff,
you need to say
it? No, other than just the custom of the Sukkot, but no, that's acceptable. That you can do that. If somebody's about to say Dvar Torah to you on the phone, you have to make Birchas HaTorah, you say, hold on, let me say Birchas HaTorah, you could just say the two baruchs, and then just listen to the Dvar Torah, say, okay, let's go.
So the reason you mentioned someone would only have to say the Yivar Rechacha is because we don't have a chiyuv in Mishnah and Gemara, or because that's the bare minimum, at least you learn.
No, you've learned something. You want to make sure, you don't want to say Birchas HaTorah and then not have some learning which follows afterwards. So, if you want to say it was wrong, I think the Yivrecha is shorter. I don't know, kind of the words are so good.
But is that really learning? Is that really
some
learning? You're just saying Pesukim.
Yeah, you're reading the Pesukim. Reading the Pesukim is, reading Pesukim is considered learning unless it's part of davening. Then it becomes questionable whether davening is considered to be learning Pesukim.
So you're doing it as part of davening, so it actually is.
Well, it's in the sitter, but it's not really part of davening, it's really learning.
Because my question was about Matovah. Because it's a long time,
right, so the order as far as this is concerned, right, it would be strange that they put it in that way, but it could be that you should say the Pesukim of Matovah should really be said there before. Matovah, yeah, there's a lot of study which has to be done with the Siddur, besides just understanding the meaning of the word, but to know where everything came from. So the reason why we say Matovah is that's the prayer that you're supposed to say upon entering the shul. Right? So it's not, people, again, as a result of where they put it in the Siddur, people just assume, okay, I'm just going to say everything because it's all part of davening. It's not really part of davening. It's really focusing your attention on, I'm about to enter into holy place. and therefore you have to, focus yourself on what you're about to do. So that's really what it is. It's not a prayer at all. It's just reminding yourself that this is a holy place, and this is where I'm going to go ahead and daven, and hope Hashem listens to my tefillos. Right.
She said, like, bare minimum, you would just have to say Shema Israel. Okay, but you've got them all four here. So it looks like you better say.
Well, that's what it is, 1.1, 1.2,
1.2. Yeah, but they're all checked off as being in the last time.
Until you do,
Right.
Just 15 minutes and do those. I'm just trying to.
Right, no, so this is, the amount of time it'll take you to say, Shmoneh Esrei Brichos HaShachar, Shema Baruch Shem in Emes Vemuna. Right, Emes Vemuna. I wrote Emes Vemuna? Oh my gosh. That's fun. All the times that I've done this, I've caught it. She changed it. So that should take no more than about 10 minutes or so. All of that stuff together.
So rather than saying all three paragraphs of the Shema, you're better off just saying Shema, Rosh and Kavod, and then MSBFT?
Correct, right. That's what's counted. You're not even saying the Hafta.
Yeah, and three paragraphs on that.
Right. You're not saying, you're only saying the first pasuk in Baruch Shem. Because again, everybody agrees women are exempt from Kriya Shema, the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. The Mishnah says, why should you say the pasuk of Shema, which includes Baruch Shem, is only to accept the Yom Kippur, which you have to do at some point during the day. But it's not a fulfillment of Kriya Shema because there's an obligation. So we have to prioritize that which is obligatory before that which is not obligatory. That's part of the complexity of formulating the chart.
Can we say it in this order that you have printed? Like, can we say it in this way? Can you spend a little bit more time?
If you know for sure, that's what you have to figure. You have to gauge to yourself somewhat how much, what block of time do I have, and what am I going to be able to say within that time. Within these, like the 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, 1.4, really you should follow the order. You should be saying Birchos HaShachar, and then Shema Baruch Shem, Emes V'Yatzi, and then Shmoneh Esrei. Because the reason Emes V'Yatzi is over there is because we like the Chazal feel that that's a nice introduction to Shmoneh Esrei. To be so met Geula L'Tfila, to go from the remembrance of the Exodus in the redemption from Egypt, that's an appropriate mindset to go into Shmoneh Esrei. So really, the order over here is really 1.2, 1.3, 1.4, 1.1. But I put it in the order of 1.1, the reason it's in the order that it is because you may not have time for anything more than Shmoneh Esrei. So I want to make sure that you know that Shmoneh Esrei is going to be the absolute obligation. Birchos HaShachar you can say later on during the day. Shema you can say later on during the day.
Well, you said Shmoneh Esrei, you should not go back and say
No, it could be that you could say that too.
Okay.
Could be it. But again, it's not obligatory. Then it would be completely voluntary. Then it's completely voluntary at that point.
So should you then say, look, the Shema? I guess I always just understood that you were supposed to say Shema, because that was probably not.
The other thing is, what if there's something you've been saying? Well, like, for example, I learned that say what you share and get hold on Hamblah, you picture yourself as being properly in the opposite. So I added on to share into my God, but I don't dominate necessarily like MSBFC, but I would say that. So, I should be leading out a Yeshir. I don't have time for both of those.
Right, we have to address our obligations before we go ahead and do those Olam Haba and the Skula ones.
So,
as far as Tfila is concerned, as Yashir is a later addition to the Siddur.
But when you say, so you would have to do all of these first before you do Az Yashir.
Az Yashir clocks in at 12.4. The last one is Shir Shal Yom. So 12.4. If you look at those pages over there, you'll see that that's whichever page is there. That ends at Az Yashir.
If you just do this top part,
yeah,
a little bit further down, and then you realize afterwards you have time, can you say the Shir Shal Yom, or would that be like kind of not?
Shir Shal Yom at the bottom?
Yeah, because you've already said Shmoneh Esrei. So if you realize, I have more time than I thought, then can you do the Shir Shal Yom, or just figure you
could, but there are other things which are a greater priority.
But can you say those after what I'm saying? If you realize you have a little more time, do you just do the Hallelujahs again, just right after Shmoneh Esrei? It's hard with you don't know how much time because you have a lot of things going on.
Right. But you could. Hallelujahs are a high priority.
Okay. Okay.
But it's not clear. It's my focus is whether or not after Shemoneh Esrei you go back and say, it's okay to Zimra. It's okay to be done. Certainly couldn't hurt. That's for sure. What?
Can we just, I don't know if I'm interrupting things, but I just wanted to talk, ask a question about what level of concentration we have to have. No, I'm being serious. I only found out a year ago that you're not supposed to be holding anything when you're down from that strength, which, you know, in all
of
education, I never ever learned. And, you know, I always thought that it was perfectly appropriate, and my friends did too, to hold a baby while I was driving. And, you know, I was just somewhere and someone on the side said this, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, no one's ever told me that.
One is not supposed to hold anything while driving.
But is that just Shemoneh Esrei, or is that...
So,
for instance, if I'm holding a baby, I could be saying Shema, but, and then, you know, would prioritize that way.
So we'll pause this, and let me address that, because it's an extremely important point that, again, just the nature of the siddur which we have in how weak our education is in siddur and davening, other than a couple of halachas here or there. So there's only one part of davening where one is talking to God. That's one aspect. The rest of davening, you are not talking to God. God is there. You are psyching yourself up, as it were, to prepare yourself to be able to speak to God. You go through this whole process of your earthly needs, the world's needs, the spiritual needs. That's the progression of Birchos HaShachar, Pesukei DeZimra, Birchos Kriyashma. That's the progression to get yourself into the mindset where you're prepared to speak to God. But the only time you're speaking to God is Shemoneh Esrei. That's why Shemoneh Esrei, you stand with your feet together, and everything about Shemoneh Esrei is supposed to reflect that recognition, that internal recognition. I'm standing speaking to the CEO who could fire me in a heartbeat. Or I'm applying to a job, and I've been unemployed for so long, and I need this job desperately, and I have to make sure that I've consulted all of the different people about my clothing and my dress. Again, one of the things which I tell them, which I try and emphasize in Shul, is that what you're wearing is not as important as how you're wearing it. So it disturbs me to no end when boys will watch. Okay, they'll come back from the shoot, they have a jacket, and they have a hat. They're like, they have the hat on like this, and the shirt is out. Now they think, I have my jacket, I have my hat, I'm good to go. But nobody would appear with the hat like this, with the shirt, you know, shirt tails out, and the, you know, buttons undone or something like that. That's not a respectful way to talk to anybody. It's not a respectful, certainly not to, not to open a book. So when you wear a jacket or hat, it doesn't bother me. But whatever you're wearing, make sure you tuck yourself in, make sure you're put together at the time that you're saying Shemoneh Esrei. The rest of davening, you're not speaking to God. And that's why you sit for most of davening. You sit for davening because the sitting allows you to concentrate better than standing. So since the rest of davening is for your needs and your purposes, and for you to be able to concentrate, that's why it's done for the most part sitting. Now the parts at which we stand happens to be, there's a reason why at each point that we do stand up, Baruch Shamar, and Yishtabach, and Dizmolasoda, and Berchos HaShach, and why we said each one of them has a separate explanation, but none of them have to do with the fact that you're talking to God because you're not. You only talk to God during Shemoneh Esrei. That's the only time you converse directly with Him, and during that time, you're not allowed to have anything which is going to distract you from that, from that activity. So even holding a child, post can discuss why it is you're allowed to hold a sinner. They have to explain that since the sitter is needed to be able to speak to God, therefore it's okay. Lulav and Esrog is something which they talk about is going to be okay because that becomes a mitzvah of the day, but one is not supposed to be holding things during the during Shemoneh Esrei.
So now, if we're doing our own impromptu tefillah thing like we talked about, is that, I'm just curious, is that considered talking to God?
That, if you're going to do a rub-a-dub-dub, thanks for the grub, type of tefillah, during that 5, 10, 15 seconds that you are conversing with God, yes, you should treat that like Shemoneh Esrei. Now, interestingly enough, an interesting idea, just a perspective, is that the Ben Yishai maintains that benching should be treated the same as Shemoneh Esrei, just sitting. So the same seriousness in not holding other things and not being distracted, not cleaning up the table and gathering and doing all sorts of things which we do during benching, we talk about in Yeshiva, that if you were to watch a closed-circuit TV of people sitting and eating, the way that you recognize when people are benching, as soon as you see them all go like this. So while they're eating, everybody has all the time in the world. As soon as they begin benching, suddenly they're in a rush. So they got to run to Seder, they got to run here, they got to run there. That's the nature. We know that about, it's true about ourselves, that we're perfectly fine until it comes time to bench, and then we look for distractions. But benching is also supposed to be a similar type of thing. Okay, but that's, okay, now, let's see if we can get through our chart. So now, that is, so now, 1.4, Emes V'yatzi. Again, Emes V'yatzi is the bracha which follows after Kriya Shema. It begins on page 94, all the way through the bottom of 96, ends Go Al Yisrael.
A little
bit more where we're still on the topic of holding a baby. Yeah. So, you're in the middle of
dawning, your baby's
taking
a nap, everything's
finally
good, and
then
your baby wakes up and starts screaming,
like,
right before Shemana Esrei, and you're not supposed to interrupt your
dawning
from the beginning of Rosh Hashanah
to the end of Shemana Esrei. What do you do? You interrupt. Baby's priority comes first. That's why it's very hard for mothers to still have to find time to dawn, because time is not your own. So the baby's needs are going to come first. Again, you have to weigh it out. You know, you might be at seeing Shalom, and then you know, the baby starts screaming, so it'll take you 15 seconds to finish a bracha, skip a little kind of Shabbat, just so you the rough don't get yourself on to one actually and run over to the baby, but you have to, again, it becomes a very difficult task.
So which is better, holding the baby and dodging Shema Esrei, or not dodging Shema Esrei?
You can't
dodging
the baby.
So it's not even a choice.
Huh? I haven't said in a while, but it's brought down explicitly in the Talmud that people bring their children to shul, and it happens. When they start crying, or start catching, or start fighting with one another, during Shema Esrei. And your obligation to the shul as the parent is to stop your Shema Esrei in the middle and take them out right away. You have no right to continue saying your Shema Esrei can distract anybody else. Anybody else is going to be distracted by the noise of your children, you pick them up. And I pick other kids out during my Shema Esrei, because they did. Just to, you know, to emphasize the point that you can't allow your children to distract other people. They're standing, speaking to the king, and that's just not allowed.
Just so you know, the thing happens at home. You sit down, and the whole thing, and the kids are totally quiet, and the second starts coming out, and it's like,
So that's the reason the Shabbat says that should be said, 1.4, is because, again, assuming that you're going to be going into Shemona Esrei, so Chazal placed great value on being Somech Geula Tefillah, going from that bracha of redemption into Shemona Esrei, and therefore, if you're going to be saying Shemona Esrei, so that it's not obligatory, because if you're not obligated to say Kriya Shema, you don't have to say the brachas associated with Kriya Shema, but it's a nice introduction to Shemona Esrei, and therefore it's considered to be a priority. Number two is Baruch Shamar Ashrei and Yishtabach. Baruch Shamar Ashrei and Yishtabach are considered to be the essential Sukkot Dezikra. When Chazal formulated, which we might not have been with Chazal, but when they said that there should be such a thing as Sukkot Dezimra, all it was, and its origin was Baruch Shama, the bracha before, the bracha after. Baruch Shama is the bracha before. Yishtabach is the bracha after. Ashrei is a tefillah, a prayer in the middle. That's considered to be essential Sukkot Dezimra. The Mishnah Berurah brings down the disagreement whether or not Sukkot Dezimra, what's its role in the Seder. And it seems to be, the way the Mishnah Berurah seems to go is that this is considered to be also part of the introduction to Shemona Esrei. So once you're going to be saying Shemona Esrei, therefore this gets elevated to also as part of the introduction to that. So that's why it gets this preferential treatment to be said at the placement number 2. 3, 4, and 5 are the 5 Halalukas. So they run from, they're not in order. Again, this order is taken from that simon. But the Halalukas are between Ashrei, so that's on page 70 through page 74. So the way, again, it's going to be prioritized by number 5 is the most important, because that's the last capital, that's the last chapter of Tehillim. So that's considered as if you don't actually finish Tehillim every day, if you say the last paragraph of Tehillim every day. So you get credited a little bit as if you had completed the Tehillim for that day. That's the highest priority. After that is number 3. It speaks more universally than the others, and then 1, 2, and 4, so they all are at the same level. Now, what's fascinating, again, which is very different than for men, is that after all of that, then if you still have more time, then you get to Shema. Then you could read the Havta, is it 6,
seven is going to be Vayayim Shema and Vayomer. Because those are things which are absolute, you're not obligated to say, women are not obligated to say. The reason why they are said is that they remind the person of acceptance of the yoke of heaven, that's Shema Yisrael, the yoke of mitzvahs, and remembering Mitzrayim. Right? One of the main reasons that we say the paragraph of Vayomer is because it reminds us of Mitzrayim, but you have to keep in mind that you've already done that at 1.4. The bracha of Emes V'yatsiv already has elements of Yitzias Mitzrayim of the Exodus, and once it already has that, so you've already fulfilled that obligation, really. So that's why it's not considered to be essential. If, after all of that has been said, then you get to number 8 is the brachas before Kriya Shema. Brachas before Kriya Shema are clearly a mitzvah seisha as man grava, and therefore they are absolutely voluntary. That they are not necessary to be said. Again, it's a strange thing to work through the siddur in that way, to have finished, you know, Yishava, and then to be able to jump straight to Shema. But according to your obligation, that could very well be done, based on our hierarchy of things, that those are brachos. It happens to be that since the Amitza, one of the fascinating things, which also relates to last week, that we know that we mentioned that there's a difference between Sfarim and Ashkenazim about fulfilling a mitzvah saseshas, making a bracha on a mitzvah saseshas man grava, making a bracha on a positive time-bound mitzvah. Ashkenazim, we have the custom that women do make a bracha on a positive time-bound mitzvah. So if you take a lulav, you would make the bracha on that. When you sit in the sukkah, you make a bracha on sitting in the sukkah. Sfarim women, for the most part, did not make a bracha on those mitzvahs. What that does to their siddur is anytime there's a part of davening which is a bracha, and it's categorized as mitzvah saseisha as non grama, you'll find in some siddurim it's not there. It's deleted, so they can't say that. They hope that it's not allowed to be said. You could get a siddur which they publish according to the psachim of Rav Avadi Yosef for Sephardi women, and it's very, very thin. Because many of these things, many of these brachas are just automatically deleted because there is no such thing as them saying birchos kriya shma. Because it's clearly a positive time-bound mitzvah, which is a bracha, and it's just not even there. It doesn't even make it. It doesn't say, some say, it's just gone. So, but we hold that it would, if a woman wants to say it voluntarily, so that's perfectly acceptable.
But does it have to be done within a certain time? Like, if you're saying that
Birchos Kriya Shema should be said, really, by, it follows the guidance of Zman Tefila, so it should be really 4 hours. Mishnah Berurah says, b'diavad, we'd allow a person to say it until midday, until chatzos, but it can't be said after chatzos. Right. That could be made up. After that, you see, is the rest of this stuff is something which is, again, this fire follows the standard hierarchy. Vayevarach David, if you want to look over there, that's on page 74. That is great value because this is a model of David HaMelech actually davening that goes until the end of the paragraph on the top of page 76, the sukkim, which follow immediately after Baruch Shama, and Hodu Hashem, that goes back to page 60, all of that falls in afterwards, Mizmor Lasoda, Behurachum, okay, all of the other stuff which is there. What's interesting, again, you have to keep in mind in terms of the hierarchy, is that Aleinu and Ashrei are clocking in at 13:14. Now, many people, again, they will say, Birchos HaShachar, you know, if they have a lot of time, they'll say, Baruch Shomer Ashrei Yishabach Shema Shmonesrei Ashrei and Aleinu. Right? So Ashrei and Aleinu, pushing Ashrei and Aleinu all the way up to that hierarchy is really somewhat misguided in terms of the hierarchy of tefillahs. Because Ashrei is something which also, it's a later addition to the Siddur, it certainly wasn't there in the, from the time of Anshei Knesset Gedola. Aleinu, as ancient as that is, part of it may have been written by Yoshua, but its incorporation into the Siddur also is something which is a late arrival to the siddur itself. Davening really ends. It's something which is, again, it's just a fun fact to know, but every tefillah which we say officially ends with a Kaddish Tiskava. If you look on page 156. Actually, look at 158. Right, so this is the Kaddish, which is between Uval Tzion and Aleinu. You'll find that same Kaddish after Mincha, after Tachanun, before Aleinu, and by Marav also you find that it's always the prelude to Aleinu, but really has nothing to do with Aleinu. On that top line of page 158, you see, you can read on the Hebrew side, you can read on the English side, but we'll read on the English side. May the prayers and supplications of the entire family of Israel be accepted before their Father who is in heaven. Now respond, Amen. That is a tefillah that Shmoneh Esrei should be accepted. That's a Solo Sahon. That word, Solo Sahon, or Vo Sahon, refers to prayers and supplications. So that's said once, and that is supposed to cover the entire tefillah. So in the origin, as soon as you got the Kaddish Tiskava, Davin was really over. Now they added things later on. They added Kaddish Yasom. They added the mourner's Kaddish, right, which is really, it's a misnomer. Kaddish Yasom literally translates as the orphan's Kaddish. Right? We translate it as the mourner's Kaddish, but it's really the orphan's Kaddish. The reason why they created an orphan's Kaddish in the first place is because the real obligation for a mourner is to leave his services, to leave davening. An orphan who's less than 13 doesn't have that option because he's a cousin, he's a minor, is not able to leave the davening. So how could it be that this poor child can't do anything to memorialize his deceased father, his deceased mother? So we took a Kaddish and we assigned it to the orphan. From that, it went from orphan to mourner. I guess they sound similar enough. But they sound similar. So we expanded it to say all of Avelim go ahead and do so. But its original origin was to give the child who's an orphan something to do to memorialize the parents since they can't daven for the other. But that's something which is a later innovation, something which was introduced much later on as far as the history of Klai Yisrael is concerned, because Kaddish Tiskava was the real end of daven. When you find in the postim that they talk about that you have to say seven Kaddishes a day, the Kaddishes end with these three Kaddish Tisavos. 110 Shachas, 110 Mincha, and 110 Mar. So Aleinu and Shir Shoyom, and whatever you may say afterwards, are all later innovations, later introductions into the Siddur. And therefore, things which appear later in the Siddur, they fall to the bottom of your priority list, rather than those things which come from either the Torah, or Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, or the Gaonim, or Rishonim, and we follow things in a very, to a large degree, in chronological order. One of the things, again, people think because it appears earlier in the Siddur, it has greater priority. If you look on page 54, bottom of page 54, did I even make it to my list? I don't think I put it on here. So that was introduced maybe in the 17th century, perhaps in the 18th century. It's not even clear who introduced it, what they were thinking, why they introduced it, and how it became so accepted into the Siddur that everybody said it. But somehow it gets in. And if you look at commentators on the Siddur, they will say explicitly, don't know where it came from, don't know why it's here, what its function is, what its purpose is. There's all sorts of speculation, but this is something which falls to the very bottom of it, because I finished off Yomi, and then I go right into Shabbat. So as soon as I get there, I'm already behind. So I haven't said Mizmor Shulchan Aruch Sabbat Zavit in years, it's been since I've said it, because I'm trying to get myself through the rest of Pesukim and those things which are actually obligations from the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, and this is one of those things which just falls by the wayside. Now, an interesting thing, with this we'll conclude, is that one of the reasons which, one of the things which I imagine nobody here says, but it could very well be that you are obligated to say, that's going to be the section which begins really on page 30 all the way through 52. Now, not all of that between 30 and 52 is the same, because there's different sections within that itself, but that's the section of Korbanos. Why is it? What? Now, if you look at source number 6, it's a fascinating idea. Source number 6 is explaining. Source number 5, we read together, that said, women must say Birchas HaTorah. So Birchas HaTorah, which was back on page 16, we said women must say that. Now, we know, and we'll talk about this next week, women are not obligated in the mitzvah per se of Torah study. So if women are not obligated in Torah study, so why do they have to make Birchas HaTorah? Why do they make a bracha on a mitzvah which you're not obligated to perform? It's a strange thing. So that's what all the commentators wonder. Why does Shulchan Aruch say women have to say Birchas HaTorah if they're not obligated to study Torah? So the Bir Halacha explains, that's what we have in source number 6. He says, fascinating, he says, Hatam, this comes from the Ma'ariel that we showed him. He says, the reason is, L'chayavos l'mod v'dinim shalahem. Number one is, women have to study the halachas which they're obligated to fulfill. So since there are plenty of halachas that women are obligated to fulfill, so there's plenty of Torah to be studied, and therefore you can make Birchas HaTorah for that reason. The Ode, now here's the second reason. This is the one that I want to focus your attention on. The Chayevet Lomar, Parshas HaKarbonos. Because women are obligated to say Parshas HaKorbanos, Kimo Shechayevus B'Tfilah, just like she's obligated to say Tfilah. V'in Kain, Kai HaBracha Alzeh. So the Gemara Lama is saying, what's the reason that one, a woman is going to say Birchas HaTorah on page 16? Because between page 30 and 52, she's going to be reading that section of Korbanos, which has Psukim, it has Mishnayos, it has Brises. Again, that's our Torah, Mishnah, and Gemara study for the day. And if you look in the source where the Bir Allah is taking this from the Ma'ariel, he says that they should be reading not only the Psukim, but the Mishnayos, and the Brises as well. And that's the reason, according to the Ma'ariel, why it is that women are saying Birchas HaTorah is because they're saying Korbanos. Again, for some reason, God's guiding hand has it there. Women don't say, men don't barely even say Korbanos, depending on what group you affiliate yourself with. But in the very origin, it could be that that's something which is a very high priority, because that could very well be the trigger why a woman is going to say Birchas HaTorah. It's because it's suspected that she's going to be saying the section of Korbanos. Again, it falls pretty low on the totem pole, as far as obligation is concerned, because of other things which are obligatory. But that section also is something which is not to be completely ignored. The most important part of that, if one wants to fulfill the obligation of Korbanos, they should read the paragraph on the bottom of page 32 and the top paragraph on 34. The psukim, just those psukim themselves that deal with the daily korban, that's the Parsha Sotamid. You don't have to say the Yiratzim beforehand, although it's certainly a nice Yiratzim, but you should say Vayidaber, which is on the bottom of page 32. And then the Shachat Oso, if you press the time, you could dump the Shachat Oso. Again, that's one of those, you know, you promise to Olam Haba six times over if you say the Shachat Oso on the thing. But in terms of obligation, so it's something which was added later on, much later, it's not really part of the Korbanos, it's just like Dabra to Lahasha.
If you come to davening late and you want to catch up, is this the same as your priority?
Oh, excellent question. Now, well, this is something which I've asked numerous times. The reason to catch up is because, the reason a man will skip things in order to catch up, that's the basis of that simon that I keep referring to where it creates the hierarchy, is because a man has an obligation of tefillah b'tzibur, to daven together with the tzibur, that's defined as saying shmoneh esrei with everybody else. So we hold that it's worthwhile to skip some of the order of tefillah in order to be able to say shmoneh esrei at the same time as everybody else. And that becomes the basis of that of trying to prioritize what a person is going to do. The question, women for sure are not obligated to daven the tzibur. Nobody expects them to show up and shul on a daily basis to daven with the tzibur. Everybody agrees that that's not obligatory. Once a woman is in shul, so which is a higher priority for a woman? Should she daven in order, which has a very great value as far as Kabbalistically, is to follow the sequence of tefillahs as they appear in the sitter, or is it a higher priority once she's in shul, skip stuff in order to say shmoneh esrei with everybody else? And that answers both ways. So I don't have a definitive answer as far as what the for sure a woman should do in that circumstance. The best thing is, come early enough, you could daven in order and say shmoneh esrei with everybody else. That's the ideal. That way you'll for sure be safe, and everybody will be happy with that tefillah. Short of that, if that's not going to be an answer, so I would tell each one of you to ask your rav what they would postulate for you, which should be your priority when you're in shul and you're behind, how to go ahead and catch up. You know, to some degree, again, your catch-up is going to be a little bit different than the men's catch-up. That's why the chart is important. But that's an important question to ask, because it happens that people come late to shul and they need to figure out how to prioritize with tefillah b'tzibur. Okay. Well, I appreciate very much your attention and your involvement, your interaction. Mitzvah Hashem, next week we're going to have part 3, the final installment of this series, where we're going to discuss the issue of women's obligation to study Torah. That'll be next week at 7:15 again.